Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Playful Humans podcast. I'm your host, Mike Montague, and my guest this week is Lisa Navarra. She's a child behavioral consultant, and you can find her at childbehaviorconsulting.com. That's easy to remember. She is also a multiple-time author and a podcaster of the Student Success Beyond Expectations podcast. So you're a podcast listener right now because you're listening to this. So check out Student Success Beyond Expectations. If you would like to learn more about child behavioral issues, especially learning challenges, and we'll dig into all kinds of interesting ways to think about play and learning. Here we go. We like to start with the joke of the week. The joke of the week this week is brought to you by statistics. According to statistics, 100% of all fatal plane crashes happen in the last 5 minutes of the flights. According to statistics, 6 out of 7 dwarves are not happy. That's not bad. But the official joke of the week is, did you know that according to statistics, R2-D2 is the most vulgar movie character of all time? I got R2-D2 down here. You can't see him. But everything R2-D2 has ever said has been bleeped in a movie. That's amazing. All right. Not great jokes, but interesting giggles or laughs at least. Are you a joke teller, Lisa?
The joke would be on me instead of people laughing with me. I think they'd be laughing at me.
I take either one. I feel like a laugh is a win. So that's great. Let's start with you and your background a little bit here, because I think when maybe people think about child behavioral consulting, they don't necessarily think play, but obviously you have a playful spirit because you have animated books sitting behind you that you wrote. You're working with children all the time, and you also have this podcast. How do you think about play in your career, or how you play for a living?
Well, you know what? Play in my career. So there's two parts of my career. One was my lab, which is my classroom. And the other is my business, which, like you mentioned, Child Behavior Consulting, where I provide professional development as well as having parents and children come to my office to work with me. So when I talk about play with you, two things come in mind. One, for the classroom, you're going to find me out on the monkey bars during recess. And all my kids know that I love the monkey bars. And then I am a serious swinger. So any one of my kids who want to try and swing higher than me have stiff competition.
Nice. But, you know,
in all seriousness, though, play is so, as you know, important. So in regards to school play, when I go outside during recess with my students, it really helps them to see the connection and the love that I have for them, as well as they see me as, you know, a little bit more, a little bit different than a teacher. So they're always, are you coming outside with us? You coming outside with us today? And the reason why I go outside is, yes, one, I'd like to have fun with them because kids are fun. And the other thing is, a lot of times you might have that student, like I have a child who loves the swings and he has autism and he wants to swing by himself. And I'm like, what about me? So I'm sneaking up, or not sneaking, but I'm walking really quietly to him. And I say, can I go on that swing right next to you? And I used to get with the finger up in the air, shaking back and forth. No, no, no. Teachers don't go on swings. And so I pout and I say, but I want to go on the swings. And I kind of pouted away. Well, after about 2 or 3 times of asking over the course of the week, my little student, my little new friend, finally said yes. He shook his head. I got a yes. So I was like, yes. And all the other students were like, yeah, go Miss Navarro. He's letting you swing. And you know what? It's a really great time, even for parents to be able to swing with their kids. They'll be surprised instead of sitting on the background, you know, letting things go by. Get on those swings with your kids. It's actually kind of fun.
I mean, I think that's a great example. I love to do that with my nieces and nephews too, is I want to play as much as they do. So one of the things I try and do is never say no if they're asking me to play. You know, I know we get tired or busy and things as adults, but I feel like if a kid wants to play with you, that's a special time, and you better have a really good reason for saying no. But then I like to tease them like you did, of saying, you know, they're like, will you push me in the swing? I'm like, sure, if you push me afterwards. And they're like, I'm not doing that. And we're like, well, I'm not pushing you then. Like, I get my turn on the swing or whatever it happens to be, like Legos or whatever. Like, I get to go too. I get a turn in this. And it's so much fun to play with them, not just like watch them play, right?
Exactly. So when I have my clients and the children come to my office, a lot of times we start connecting and bonding, building that rapport while building in all those strategies through play. I usually take out my big Jenga and we're building it taller than the kids, but there's so much involved in that. They've got to make eye contact. They've got to be able to breathe for a calm mind and calm body. They have to be able to focus and what we call caring tree and launch. It's just so many strategies that go on with play. And then when I work with the parents, they learn to actively get involved with their child in a fun way, and yet they're still working on the concerns that they may have with their child. So play is so multi-purpose.
Yeah, and I guess this is an obvious question to me. I think when I think about play, I think about like what person would it not be good for? Right. Like, I can't think of an age where you should stop playing, or a role or a position, or even a disability or anything. So I guess it's not the right question for you, but maybe it'll give you a jumping off point. Is, do you feel like play is better or less beneficial for neurodivergent students than neurotypical? Or do you find that really it's just a good prescription for everybody?
You know what, Mike? I think I hear where you started off with, too. So I'd like to make a point about that, too, if that's okay.
Yeah.
And that is that, you know, who isn't play good for? Well, play sometimes is really difficult for some kids. Right?
There you go.
So we know that play has so many benefits to it. You're getting along with others and listening to each other and winning and what that's like and having sportsmanship, or losing and being okay with that and learning from it, you know, and still having fun. And I mean, it's limitless. But what happens with children sometimes when they have difficulty playing with others, or they don't want to, they want to be by themselves. So let's take that child. You have a child who just wants to be by themselves. Now, we know they're missing out on those opportunities of growth in those areas. So we might want to start off slow with them and start in an area of interest of play with them. And yes, it's equally important for them, but it might not be so easy for them to be able to, no, just engage in that process. And then you have your child who, you know, doesn't really want to take accountability and they have to win all the time. So now when you're that parent, it's like, oh, I don't want to play. Here's the iPad, here's the TV, you know. And it's really, really hard when you have a child that doesn't take accountability and it has to be on their terms. So those are some things that we work through also. But bottom line is, play is good for everybody on their level, and we keep on growing from there.
I think that's great. And I mean, really just, again, good advice for every human at every age is to kind of meet people where they are. And I have that playfulness quiz on my website. If you go to playfulhumans.com/quiz, because every adult is different. You know, some people like puzzles and quiet, you know, play, and other people like adventures and social activities or sports and competitiveness. And other people want to avoid competitiveness at all costs, or they want to be liked and be the class clown. And it's a completely different personality. And I think that's obvious that children would be the same way. But I think that takes us really into your specialty, because I host game shows and I have had a lot of groups of special needs recently. And we always kind of start slow with the music and lights a little bit slower than we normally would, just to make sure everybody is cool with it. But sometimes I fear that I'll be overstimulating them, or like you said, a wrong answer would cause a bad reaction or something. I feel like there are sometimes a lot of fears that maybe are in our heads as adults, or even the parents, when you've kind of tried things a few times and it hasn't worked out. What advice would you give for adults who are trying to facilitate good play, especially in a behavioral situation?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So first, you want to make sure that the child knows how to play before beginning. Then you want to make sure that the child knows the expectations and the rules of the play. So expectations and rules are different. I'll get into that in a second. And then the last thing is you always, always want to make sure that you ask your child, especially if sometimes they have difficulty following directions, or they forget, or they're very emotional, have difficulty what's called self-regulating, they go high and low. You want to say, okay, what's happening here? What are the rules? What are the expectations? How do we play? Get them to tell you what is expected. And the reason for that is because, one, they have to really organize their thoughts and think about it. You'll know what they're understanding before you start playing. And what they say, they are more likely to visualize and see in their mind of them doing. So if they're seeing themselves following the rules and expectations and having fun, they're more likely to do that rather than knocking it down because somebody else is winning. You know what I'm saying? So that's really important. And when I'm talking about the rules and expectations, you know what, Mike? Give me a game that I might know, that everyone will kind of know, that has rules in it. I mean, all games have some kind of rules.
Yeah, let's just say like Family Feud. You're trying to guess the five words that are up on the survey. If you don't get one on there, you get an X, and you get three X's as a team.
Yeah. Right. Good one. All right. So we have the X. You can't negotiate not getting the X if you don't get the top five. There's no negotiating. Right. But I was going to say, but one minute, I'm really close, no negotiating. So here's the rule. The rule is you don't get the top five, you get an X. The expectation is that you don't argue about it. And then here's the why. Because we need to take turns so everyone else has a chance. Just like when it's your turn, they can't negotiate either. They run the rule, the game runs smoothly, and then we have fun. So you see the difference between the rules and expectations?
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think one of the things I've noticed is the expectation of fun is more important than anything, because especially with children, I mean, even adults don't like to lose, right? But we have adults come in. Maybe I'll just use that example so I'm not throwing kids under the bus. But we have adults come in that want to like bet $100 on the game. And we're really making this up as we go along. We'll kind of change the rules, or we'll try to cheat for the team that's behind to keep it interesting. Because if one team's up by, 15 points, the last 30 minutes of the game are going to be pretty boring. So we try to set a really clear expectation of fun, even though the rules are also clear, because when the rules are clear, it's easier for everybody to have fun, right? There's not miscommunications. There's not fights and arguments or people, trying to negotiate with the judge, like you said. Right. So I love that, because I think expectations of fun and that it's low stakes is what makes it play. If it's high stakes, it's work. So you set those expectations that, hey, this is something we're just doing for fun. If we lose, it's okay. If we win, that's okay too. But this is not a high stakes game that we're playing for. That's any reason to get upset, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's funny is that I'm glad that you brought up the adults. So as with kids, it's funny because we like kids to go play, release some energy, right? So we're talking about home and being a parent. Just go get your energy out, go make some friends, just have fun, right? But also, play is really important in schools. And it's really important because when they release that, that energy, they're not thinking in the same parts of their brain that they are using when learning. Learning cognitively, academically, and being able to control their body in a certain way. So what happens is they begin to restore what they've used during that school day. So that's another really important reason for play, is to give that break. It's kind of like adults when you feel, you know, that person that's like really intense in your life, but they've taken a break, you know that person. And then they're like, oh, wow, totally different energy. The way that they're speaking is calmer. Like you just see it, you feel it. Well, the same thing goes for kids. When they have the opportunity to play, they're more ready to work. Now, that transition might be that you might have some parents, you know, or people right now thinking, I don't know about that, Lisa, because I'm trying to get my kid off the playground and do his homework. Transition's another issue. You know, that's another area that we can work on. But that once you get through that whole transition, those can be the benefits back and forth from play to work, work to play.
Well, I love that. And I was going to go to a similar place here, because I think sometimes, especially, and maybe I'm reading into this, so you're the expert, tell me, but I think parents have a tendency to, and especially with special needs, try to keep everything safe all of the time. And to me, you do need those edges. You do need time to be out of control a little bit so you can learn how to transition back to that. Or for me, I think play is a great place to test your limits, to learn new skills of coping with loss or physical challenges. And even in this little game show that we do, I've seen fun stuff. I've seen 90-year-old ladies climb these 5 stairs to drop the Plinko board at the top of the Plinko board, right? They have to get up there to do it. And I've seen them pull themselves out of their wheelchair or let go of the walker to go up there. And same thing with students that have cerebral palsy, trying to spin our big wheel for Wheel of Fortune or, you know, do the Plinko chips or whatever. I feel like that's really cool. It's a safe place to test your limits, both mentally and physically. And that, that to me seems important, that if we're going to lose control, let's lose it in the play environment and headspace and stuff, and not when we're trying to focus or be serious, or maybe there's an emergency, like, you know, it's traffic, or we're trying to travel on a plane or something that is like more dangerous for us, right?
Absolutely. Play is a place where if kids are making funny noises and doing funny things, and as long as they're not hurting anybody, then you can't say, oh, please, that humming noise is driving me crazy, because that's the place that can be their safe place, you know? So absolutely, let it go.
So, and I want to circle back to you here in a minute and learn more about like your writing and the stuff that you do creatively. But one last question there, I think, leads naturally into that transition. I feel like maybe you can't play too much, but there are times where play is not appropriate. Like, you know, in a classroom or in certain situations, let's say, you know, church or something like that is a time to do back. Do you have any advice for transitioning or maybe setting ground rules or how to figure out those boundaries for children?
Sure. Again, it goes to expectations. So when we're done here at the playground, then this is what we're doing next. So at least they have that idea in their mind as to what it is that's happening in their life. Now, before leaving that playground, practice. You can even practice if you have a child who doesn't transition well. You can practice and say, okay, so something that I use with my clients all the time, and I could give you a story even just of yesterday of how effective it is. People in the office were like, wow, you took him from here, which was like a 12 on a 10 scale, and you brought him straight down to a 0. And it's not magic, but it has to do with breathing and teaching the children that they have control. They need to breathe, and how it makes them feel. And like I mentioned before, having a calm mind, because when we have a calm mind, we're more in control. And we're more in control of our thoughts, feelings, and what we do. And part of that is then having a calm body. So taking them off of that playground Breathing. Okay, check your body. Are we ready to get in that car? Are we still very excited? You tell me. You know, building that awareness. It's really, really, it's essential. And you'll see that after a while, after kids can label, oh, it makes you feel good. What does good mean? I'm in control. My body's still, you know, they start labeling what they feel and see. They start breathing on their own, which makes that transition easier.
I love that. And it seems like another one good for adults. I feel like adults sometimes jump from one activity to another, and meditation and mindfulness and breathing is so powerful to even transition from work to your home life, or from, you know, play back to work, or, you know, on a lunch break or something. That just sounds like great advice for every human. And one follow up question on that was, do you find it easier to get the energy out ahead of time before a, like, you know, big event or something serious? Or is it better to kind of keep things calm and then say, hey, use it as a reward after this? We're going to go to Chuck E. Cheese or something and you can go wild. I kind of feel like for me personally, as an adult, like I would rather get the energy out. I would rather go play, then come back rested and, like, you know, take a few minutes to deep breath. But if you try and tell me like, wait, like kids don't understand how long that is, or if they have that energy still, it wouldn't end well. But what do you think?
I think it depends on the child, first of all. And what I've seen, though, the majority, if I had to choose, I would say after, because kids with disabilities often have some what's called executive functioning delay or deficit. And that's the area where, like, and the skills that we need for planning and time management and organization. And usually when we wake up, because we've replenished it during our sleep, hopefully the child's able to sleep, then they're more open and able to attend to tasks where later on they might not be able to as much. So it depends on the child, but keeping in mind that whole ability to be able to focus and remain in control.
Yeah, I think that that makes sense too. Like I said, I can see it both ways, where if you wear somebody out and they get tired, then they lose their willpower and stuff when they're tired too. So, you know, like adults should do their creative work first thing in the morning, like do the writing or the focus things you need to do, because the more you drain down it, it doesn't work. So yeah, makes a lot of sense, and everybody's different. So I wanted to ask you about your stuff. You've written those children books behind you. People can find them at childbehaviorconsulting.com, the Harry's series of books. But you also host the Student Success Beyond Expectations podcast, which leads me to believe that you're some sort of creative, that you have a creative voice or something that you need to get out. How did you find that? Or what do you find valuable about the creative work you do just making stuff?
Oh, Mike, I would create Henry all the time. I would write more books. I want Henry to be a cartoon. I want Henry to be the child who in my books has ADHD, and that's revealed in Henry Learns to Launch, and he learns to self have self-control and believe in himself. And then Maria in that green book where it says Henry helps a friend. Now roles are reversed. And, you know, for me, the main thread is the excitement that the books and the music too, right? I co-produce music.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I've got posters and worksheets and resources. It goes on. The main thread is Henry is relatable to students who struggle learning. And that is incredibly rewarding, especially when I hear a child say, Henry's like me. They don't say I'm like Henry. It's so interesting. They say Henry's like me, because Henry used to get in trouble all the time and he was misunderstood, and he even lost recess, Mike. He was misunderstood. It's in the book. Yeah. And until he met his teacher, Ms. Ravelli, who understood him and gave him the tools to learn and believe in himself. So it gives me a space to take what I'm doing with my real work. And those are my real students. Those are real lessons mm-hmm. that I've taught. So it's real, it's evidence-based, research-driven. And I see the value in the change and the empowerment that it gives to kids, because it takes all of those feelings of being out of control, not being able to focus, not thinking positively, and it gives them a place to go when they just don't know. So I would do that forever. I'd create forever knowing that it's helping these kids and the adults, because I provide training in how to use right. the learning tools. Got learning tools also. It's visual and verbal prompting system. I would teach the adults in how to teach the kids. And so really, it's like limitless. You're a creator. You know, it's like limitless. I have the author visits. I'll come in, read the story. We do a project. I mean, if there's a need out there, Henry and I together, we fill it, you know?
I love it. And I definitely relate to that a lot too. I'm wondering, what do you do though that's not work related, that's just for fun? Do you have like an item on your fun bucket list, or what do you do when you need to like step away from all of that?
So I probably need to call you more often and say, Mike, I need a reminder to stop working. mm-hmm. But I love to run. I love to hike.
Nice.
And a place for me to really go to be able to breathe is, I used to be an avid rock climber. So I used to climb hundreds of feet up high, just dangle above the mountain and just be able to breathe. And that's like a really nice space for me. And you know what? Something too, my dog, Rosie, she's a golden doodle. She's over there. We can't see her right nice. Now, but I'm training her to be a therapy dog. And although that's some work, it's also kind of play for me, because I just find it fun. I love to watch her learn, and I love to really visualize helping others with her. And to me, that's a lot of fun.
Those are both great answers for me. I love pets for sure. And I feel like playing with pets and kids is so great because they're natural. They're still in that state. Like, play is easy for them, and you can learn so much from their energy and the way that they approach it. And I can relate too. I'm obviously somebody that likes social play with all the public stuff that I do, but there is also something like meditative and restorative to just going out by yourself, especially in nature and, yes. and recharging and just dropping all those expectations of the cell phones and the emails and the people and keeping up appearances for other people too, that can be exhausting. So
and music.
I like both
I
of those great ideas.
And I love dancing.
What Lots kind of music?
Dance music, you name it. Yep. Love it.
Awesome.
I'm the one out there moving the tables.
I love that. I haven't done that in a while, but I feel like I need to bust a move again. Now, hopefully right. there'll be, you know, wedding receptions and parties where we can do that again now.
Places are opening up again.
I would love it. Okay. Last thing, we like to close with a game. Do you want to play a game?
Is it an easy game, Mike?
I promise I'll hit an easy one for you.
Take it easy on me? All right, then I'll play. I'm in.
All right. I don't want to make you work too hard. It's supposed to be fun.
I don't know.
You know, I've done over 100 interviews. Nobody said no yet, but it would be hysterical. I'm waiting for somebody to be like, nah, I'm good. So we got you the Family Feud questions, the survey says. So these should be really easy. Their top answers are on the board. There's usually like 5, 6. Oh, the last one has like 8 right answers. So all you have to do is get one on the card and get 2 out of 3 to win. Right. First one is, name a vocation in which you can achieve greatness.
Being a behavior consultant.
Hey, I will take it. Teaching is on the list. So yes. You get that one right for sure. Doctor, politics, acting, sports, or the clergy, also on the list for those of you playing at home. All right. Next one. This is the movie one. This one's hard, but I feel like it was for kids, so you might have a good answer here. Name a movie or a movie franchise that the whole family can enjoy.
Disney.
Yes. One of the Disney franchise movies. Which one?
Okay. Like an actual movie like Moana.
Moana did not make the list. No. But we have Frozen, Toy Story, Lion King, Shrek, and The Sound of Music. Oh, the top five. All right. Okay. Now the pressure's on because this is card number three and we're one and one. Name a place where you keep pictures of your loved ones.
Oh, there's so many places. Your bedroom.
The bedroom is on there. You got it. And phone, number one answer, wallet, photo album, on the wall, desk, living room, or computer. All good answers there. So you win. You did it, Lisa.
Yay!
You got two out of three. Congratulations. You win a free 30-second commercial here. Whatever you have asks for us that we can help you or gives to us that we can, you can help us. Let us know what you have going on.
Well, you know what? I have going on a New York State panel and discussion to help children and adults. In that, we are working with the State Assemblyman Doug Smith, who is a ranking member of the Education Committee. We're talking about mental health in the classroom and beyond, turning I can't into I can to teach educators executive functioning skills that we need to be teaching children. So everything that I have here applies to what educators need to know to be able to help their own students and as well as parents. So if you like, keep up with me on Facebook, Child Behavior Consulting. And also take a look at Henry. If you have children, grandchildren, even yourself, because it's meant as a platform for adults to learn about skills to help them focus and launch. So we can really use that support to get it out there to reach as many children as we can. It's all work of heart here. So
yeah, you bet. And great stuff. And we didn't say specific issues, but I was on your podcast talking about my dyslexia. Yes. And so I recommend people check out the Student Success Beyond Expectations podcast. But could you run down maybe like the top five? You're talking about like ADHD, autism, anything else that are like are the big ones?
Learning disabilities of any kind, strong spirited, anything that has to do with a child who seems very emotional or behavioral, difficulty coping, difficulty taking accountability, but you know, impulsive, inattentive. And really that's a lot of children now. Impulsive, inattentive, and they don't believe in themselves that they could persevere through challenges.
That's the sad part for sure. But there is help. Go to childbehaviorconsulting.com. The link's in the show notes. Check out that Harry's series of books and the tools on her website. Henry's. I think I said Harry's twice, didn't I? Henry's series of books at childbehaviorconsulting.com. For more information on Playful Humans, you can go to playfulhumans.com. We have the quiz that I mentioned in there. We also have some great articles and videos, other podcasts. You can join the community of other adults trying to rediscover the power of play. I'm not sure we all got it figured out, but we're always trying to work together and share ideas. So if you're doing anything fun, share it with the group in the club and share this episode with somebody that you think needs to hear it, either a parent of a child or somebody else that needs to be more playful. Until next time, if you can't be good at it. That's what I always say.
Don't wait for tomorrow. Chasing the sunshine and go out and play.
Go play, everybody.